Good morning, welcome to our meeting at 9:00 AM on June 18th, 2024, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, our Vice President, Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, our Secretary, John Harlow, CEO General Manager, Alan Lonrock, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Before we begin today, please join me for a moment of silence for our team member, Mike Sheehan, who recently passed away. Thank you. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute to turn off your cell phones or electronic devices at this time. This session is for the Board and the CEO General Manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. So our first item on the agenda is our General Manager briefing and study session. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Commissioners. Lots of good stuff on the agenda today, so we'll get started. First up in your packet was the legislative update, and we have our fantastic PR team here to answer any questions.
Any questions, Commissioners, on the legislative report?
I have none.
No, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Okay, so first up then will be a community engagement update with Kelly Stickney. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Kelly Stickney, Lead Communications Specialist Engagement. I am really excited to be here today to tell you a little bit about the work that our team has been doing over the last 6 months. But first, I wanted to just acknowledge the team members that are here and online. And so you may recall that earlier this year, we divided our communications work into two separate teams, one focusing on communications as a one-way conversation, and the other team focusing on engagement as a two-way conversation. And as part of my team is Laura Zorich, who is having some much-deserved PTO today. Heather Erbst, our education program coordinator, who is online right now. And then we have two new team members to my right, Sophia Hiske, who's our new marketing communications specialist coming from the Marysville School District. And our summer intern from Seattle University is Jasmine Garcia, also to my right. So as we look back at this year, we've accomplished, I think, quite a bit. From the Snow Goose and Birding Festival to our groundbreaking at our South Everett Solar Project, celebrated Arbor Day. We had a few different resource fairs we attended to support our senior populations. And we also had two of our major events already this year, the Energy Block Party, which we estimate we had between 3,000 and 4,000 of our customers attend, despite what was, as you recall, a very rainy day, because I know you were all able to attend. And then we also had our Hydropower Appreciation Day, which we had the best attendance we've had at thus far, with approximately 114 customers in attendance that day, learning all about how hydro works and why it's important to the PUD. And that was also a very rainy day where they got to really experience how hydropower works. So these were our events that we started off with this year. And right now we are looking ahead to the summer, and there is a lot going on this summer all throughout the county. We're really starting to look as an engagement team is how do we demonstrate our geographic equity, as well as looking at equity of reaching all of our different populations. So I love this map because it really shows that we are attending events all around the county. And these are overwhelmingly events that our community members are holding, where we're going out and meeting them where they're at to talk to them about things that are important to them that have to do with our utility. So I know some of these are super fun events like parades, which I know Commissioner Logan, you'll be driving our 36th in the Arlington 4th of July parade. And other of these events are, you know, slightly more serious. This list does not include a series of 4 integrated resource planning open houses that we'll be starting this summer at various locations around the county. We're taking a slightly different approach to that this year. year, really going out to different locations, trying to add some extra value in terms of the way we're promoting the event and providing a few resources to customers in addition to gathering their very important opinions on this topic.
Is Swift's Night Out?
Swift's Night Out is located out in Salton. And my understanding is it's put on by the Audubon Society, so it has a little bit of that bird, because we do such great work on
it. It's at Frank Wagner Elementary School in Monroe.
Oh, my apologies. Yes, you are completely right. So as we transition to talking about the work that our education program is doing, I wanted to pause briefly because we also lost a very important member of our education team this year. So as I talk about the amazing success that this team has had, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that every one of these successes is a real testament to Jenny LaMarca's work on our team over the years. Just an amazing human being, and our team has been deeply impacted by that loss. In the same breath, I really want to highlight the amazing work that Heather Herbst has been able to do this year, despite what has obviously been a challenging past few months. Her dedication to PUD's mission, her students, and her teachers is exemplary, and she's just really gone above and beyond to continue to meet those needs throughout the year. So amazing work by Heather. So for this year, we had 730 lessons, which touched over 14,000 students. We had 208 lessons specifically focused on hydropower and renewable energy. 47 of our Wanda Flipple Ferry lessons, which are really focused on water conservation for our water utility. We touched 79 schools, 12 STEM nights, held two teacher workshops where we trained teachers on how to do these presentations themselves, which is something we've received tremendous feedback on and will continue to perhaps grow those opportunities. And we have 15 guest speakers, which is PUD employees that are invited into the classroom to talk about their work at the PUD, and is another way to really show the diversity of career opportunities we have here at the PUD. One thing we're really excited that we did this year for the first time was launch our Woods Creek field trips. So this launched this spring. This was possible, and huge thanks to Jason Sikowski and Don Pressler and Generation for providing us with $5,000 of their budget to fund the buses that allowed these classrooms to come out to Woods Creek and experience this day. The feedback we've received has been tremendous. We had 8 field trips with about 527 students and 92 adults that were in attendance. We even had students say that this was the first time they'd ever seen a waterfall, which is just amazing. So we're not only putting these students in touch with hydropower, with career opportunities, with renewable energy, but also just with in touch with nature itself, which is just tremendous. And we're really looking forward to the work next year. We're right now beginning our planning efforts for that. Again, we want to thank members of the Generation team, Haley Tangs, for tremendous support. It's a big lift for them to come out and staff all these events, and we really appreciate it. Along with our facilities team, who helps support us with things like very important tents, because that area especially is a rainy area in an already rainy area, so we appreciate them. And again, we're receiving tremendous feedback from our educators. We have field trip signups. We'll go out again this fall. We are already getting very consistent interest from teachers who just want to build this opportunity. So we're looking to see how we can do that, how we can also maximize some of our other great opportunities like the Arlington microgrid, and continue to provide the same in-class support that our teachers have become to rely on us for. So this is, a short recap of what we've done this year so far. I'm very happy to answer any questions that you might have about this.
Questions?
I have no questions.
Microphone needs to be a little closer.
I have no questions, thank you.
I have no questions.
You know, a comment and a question. I'm so proud that we do so much in the education space for school-aged children. I just think it's a great investment. It's a great investment to help our utility. It's a great investment for our industry. I just think it's a perfect time to get people excited about this kind of thing. And, you know, if you've never seen a waterfall, then it's, yeah. Question, I know there's a project that we're working on with the county to listen to kind of a demonstration, a mobile demonstration thing. You know what the status is, and have we thought about how we're going to integrate that into these programs?
Yes, absolutely. So Aaron Sweeney has been our primary point of contact, along with Jenny. She worked a lot on that project. My understanding is that we're relatively close to production of that demonstration out of the microgrid. And there has been thoughts about how we bring students and the public into that. We have some ideas already with the new North County office coming to maybe do something next spring, which both can showcase that aspect of the project, as well as the office, as well as the training yard. So we're talking about that. And then I think when this demonstration is done, we'll have a talk amongst the education team about how do we ramp up activities there, perhaps even looking into something similar like what we're doing with buses to Woods Creek.
Yeah, I think that might help jazz up how students will look at that, because, you know, we bring engineers and electives in, and we turn the switch and the lights stay on. Sort of exciting for them, but it's sort of anticlimactic if you're, you know, eight. For nothing to happen when everything is happening behind the scenes.
Absolutely, and thank you, Commissioner. We're definitely looking into ways to jazz that up.
It looks like Brenda might have some.
Brenda White with Local Government Relations. Just to further what Kelly shared on that modular microgrid, it's in the construction stages right now. I know the team met with the designer. It's looking really good, and there is a little memorial for Jenny on the unit. In conversations and coordination with the county, we're hoping for a little mini ribbon cutting at the Evergreen State Fair, so with at our booth. So crossing fingers, we can meet that timeline and also meet the county's timeline for funding, because it's a $75,000 grant that we've received for this project. So, yeah.
Any follow-up questions?
No, it's going to be mobile, right? We can take it different places.
Yeah, it's collapsible. It'll look like something that we'll be able to move very easily. It'll have connected solar and battery pack to it, so a little laptop. So there'll be a lot of, really just a lot of touch interaction for students. It's just to see various responses under conditions where a battery will be relatable, this project.
Be nice to have those at city council meetings around the county.
Yeah. Yeah.
Show it to the city councils.
A lot of good uses.
Did you also need follow up?
No, I haven't.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So a couple things. First of all, Kelly, fantastic job highlighting all the great work that the team is doing. Again, it shows our commitment to the community and all the goodwill that's being built. And again, a huge kudos to Kelly. I also do want to highlight, Kelly gave a presentation on our community engagement at the APPA National Conference in San Diego. And I unfortunately did not get to see it, but I have heard nothing but phenomenal feedback that she absolutely nailed it, just crushed it. So huge kudos to Kelly. Also, I'm glad, Sophia and Jasmine, that you're here and able to engage on the team. And lastly, I would highly recommend driver training for Commissioner Logan.
I have a CDL. This is the last time you've got me.
I want to see that.
I will say that as one who did hear that presentation, and I missed it, and Melissa did too. Maybe there were others. Oh, maybe Rob. Yeah. Anyway, it was really well done. It was super. Just great.
It was great and very engaging, and you know.
Yeah.
Both Kelly and Rob did great, and they both had the first session right after lunch. And they both did a great job of getting the crowd just riveted on their topic, so.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone's very proud.
I do have an observation.
Yes.
This was in San Diego.
It was.
I'm gonna give you some slack for driving issues. You're driving in San Diego. Now, as long as you didn't hit anything.
Excellent, thank you, Kelly.
Thank you so much.
So next up is a Connect Up quarterly update, and Tim Epp. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, John. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Tim Epp, Program Director for AMI. I'm here to give you quarterly update. And no action required on the part of the board. This is informational only today. Of course, questions are welcome. So we'll go through where we're at, program status-wise, overall program, and then meter deployment status, AMI network status, and then talk about where we're at just kind of day-to-day running the system, and talk about a big win that we had and where we're going next with our progress on AMI 2.0. So first of all, program status, we are currently running under budget. That is primarily due to delays in meter delivery, and those numbers are accurate through end of April when I put the packet together. We are in a place where we are reworking our end of year or end of program forecast. This is part of our annual budgeting exercise, so we'll be pulling together some updated numbers. Right now, though, I do not expect us to be out of alignment with what we have told the board for overall program of $93 million. On the meter supply side, we continue to be pushing our vendor constantly. We're a little bit behind on our water side. Electric so far this year, we're currently on target for the latest projection that they gave us, lagging a little bit on the commercial side. I am still waiting for my third quarter projections though for meter count, so I'm always nervous, always trying to manage and monitor what's going on with our vendor. So that brings us to our, my top risk is meter supply. By far that is the thing that gives me the most angst overall for the program. Staffing changes. You will notice that I am up here alone. We have some turnover on the program staffing. Kevin, Travis, and Mitch have all been promoted to new positions within the company. So kudos to them. They have demonstrated their skill and abilities in the job on the program so far and were rewarded with new positions across the company. Kevin's now program lead for our SnowSmart program. I'm sure you'll be hearing from him regularly in the future. Travis is taking a project management position within IT that will help him further his career and development as a project manager. And Mitch will be taking over as manager of our metering services department as our metering superintendent is retiring soon. Not only do we have turnover within PUD, but we also have turnover with our vendor. So our account executive, Christian Anderson, is moving on to a new position within the company. And so we have a new exact there. So none of these I think are shocking or should be shocking in a program that lasts this long, but it is change that we're adjusting and working around.
So do those positions go away in terms of support of the project?
So Kevin,
those are the three there.
Yeah, Kevin's position moved over, so that's not a backfill. I will be taking over full program management responsibilities.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Is that condolences or congrats?
Yeah. I don't know, ask me in a couple more months.
Sorry about
that. Tony's working. Yeah. No, it's an honor to be trusted with the whole program, so I think we're gonna be fine. Travis is, AMI was an assignment. He was a full-time employee in my organization, so we will be replacing him. There are other things that go beyond the end of the program. With Mitch, we are taking a harder look then at actually how we have work organized in his area. So he's going to be packing responsibilities with him and then doling out and reassigning some activities. But I do believe that we are looking at probably an elimination of a program, a temporary FTE position. So that is not a full-time FTE. That was not, it was a temporary program thing.
Okay.
The other thing I mentioned up there is customer repair as a risk. These are just the ongoing bigger customer repairs, so beyond our customer repair policy, we've got an electrician on board for. These are things that go well beyond that, and we'll just where customers need to do major, major work, so that will have a risk of dragging the end of the program out. So.
Have we had many challenging customer repairs so far?
No, no. Our electricians are doing doing a good job keeping up. Most of them have been on the minor side. I will talk about one in a upcoming slide, though, because it's interesting. So over on the meter deployment side, electric, actually, I checked this morning, we're at 21,000 installed. That's still around 5% of our total. We are targeting to get 1,000 per week at this point, but our goal is still 5,000. That's 1,000 a day, still dependent on meter supply. Water's doing well. They have 6,000 installed, which is about 20%. Again, we're operating a little bit below our targeted amount, trying to get to 250 per week. We have had some turnover in the deployment team there, so just trying to keep up with that.
I'm going to hold it.
Okay. We are, as we call it, business as usual, so all new installation, new construction within the county will be set with AMI meters from now on. So we are no longer ordering our old legacy meters, and we are fully transitioned to AMI meters.
How many approximately meters do we set at a month?
Oh, goodness.
No.
So I think our growth rate, I'm looking at John, I think our growth rate is somewhere in the four to 5,000 a year, so.
A year?
A year, so I'd have to, yeah, I'm sure that's seasonal.
600 a month-ish.
Okay.
So does that mean our network works now everywhere in our service territory?
That's correct. So I do have a slide on status, but we are mostly covered. There are a couple of small gaps that we're still looking to fill. That is one of the benefits about having the network deployed fully. Opt-out rate remains at 0.2%. In our business case, I think we had planned for 0.5%. So things are going well there. I think we're still kind of monitoring, you know, different regions that we're going into. So we are now starting to focus on East County. We were expecting from conversations we'd had with Puget Sound Energy, Tacoma Power, we talked to them about opt-out rates, and they said, yeah, definitely their rural areas saw an increase. So far, it's not that bad. So we'll see how that plays out, though, over the rest of the program. But right now, we're pretty pleased that it's only at 0.2%. And we actually had our first opt-in this couple weeks ago. So we had a customer who said, you know what, put me back in. Community outreach, thanks to Brenda White. Brenda's been helping to reach out and coordinate some presentations to various groups. We've spoke to the Edmonds Climate Protection Committee, which is a committee made up of citizens and city council and the staff of City of Edmonds. That was a really great conversation, really enjoyed that with them. Also, we spent time with the City of Sultan and the Town of Index. And I will go back to Index anytime. They were a hoot. Really enjoyed the conversation there. What's that?
I went to a fair up there a few years ago. I had the greatest time.
Yeah, it was a great meeting. Very, very informal. So that was very enjoyable. And so Brenda and I will continue to work on that together. I think she's got a number of ideas of other cities that would be good for us to get in front of. And so we'll coordinate that as we're doing our deployment to different areas. Another thing, as we're picking up our deployment to business customers, we're getting more of our business level meter forms. So we have put in some new communications that are a little bit more focused on the business customers. Our AMI network deployment, this is gonna remain fairly steady. So we only have 149 plans, so we're at 95% of our network currently deployed. We'll get 5 more wrapped up before the end of the year, hopefully before end of third quarter. And then we've got 2 that are a bit more involved that we'll take into end of first quarter next year, but in really good shape there. Right now, really, we're just moving into more of this operating tuning and maintenance mode with the network, so monitoring how well things are being performing and working through challenging things. We had what's called a spectrum encroachment, so we found there was some interference. This is a licensed spectrum, so Census has that. They own that spectrum with the FCC, so they can go after it. They actually did talk to the business owner that was encroaching there. That'll be fixed pretty quickly. Meter rooms, always a challenge. You have meters set in the center of buildings surrounded by concrete walls, so sometimes that can be a challenge, and these are things that we know we need to work through. And then also, we have a weatherproofing issue that we're working with our vendor on. The boxes that hang up on the poles, we found some water leakage. So these are just normal kind of challenges that come up in operating a system like this. Other daily operation things. Billing is going really well, and that's really, we're really happy about that. The team worked very hard to try to make sure that this would be as smooth and seamless to our customers as possible. Not to say it's perfect. I like to think of the image of a duck on water, above water. Things are calm and cool, and underwater, the feet are going like crazy. So good job to customer accounting, who make sure that we're on top of any issues that do pop up. Our AMI network performance overall, we are well above our target. We have a 99.5% uptime expectation, and we're consistently above that target. Other things going on, upgrades. So we've upgraded our head-in system. We have an upgrade of our meter data management system scheduled for the end of the month.
So when you talk about the network performance, that's the ability of the meter to communicate its data.
That's correct.
By at least once a day.
Correct.
Okay. And so if it doesn't, in that tiny percentage it doesn't, is it getting through on another day?
Yes. So the meters do hold a certain amount of history
in
them, and they retry. Okay. So if they need to retry in order to make sure that that's a successful. And then even if it doesn't, there are also safeguards on the other end where we've got some calculations that will fill in any missing intervals to make sure that we're whole.
So when we have, let's say we have a meter that is having difficulty, will we eventually look to see if we need to change our communication system so that meter owner can get closer to real time? Or, I mean, I know that's...
Yeah, we do have some options. We have a couple of options that we'll work with our vendor on. So our vendor is contracted for 100% coverage, but that's 100% of what we gave them when we started the program. With our growth, there may be new things that we'll be on the hook for in terms of needing to tune, but we do have a couple of options for how we can make sure that we are getting those communications. So big win, Hat Island. There was a lot of planning, a lot of coordination that took place for getting Hat Island meters swapped out. Fortunately, the weather was spectacular. The team was able to knock out the entire island in 2 days. And there was a lot of coordination teams from our warehouse, from our line department, metering services, as well as our deployment team. Probably missing somebody, but the team got out there and hustled real good and made sure that we got everything taken care of. I mentioned a meter repair, an interesting meter repair. We had one known issue that we prepared for before going over, and that involved waiting for low tide to fix a particular meter. So never would have thought to have to look at tide tables for our meter repairs, but we were able to get that one knocked out in that time frame as well. Very happy about that. So with things operating very well day to day, it's actually freed us up for looking beyond our business case. So in our business case, you know, billing, meter reading billing was a big part of what we were after. But we had a lot of other ideas of benefits that we could use AMI systems for. And so we are now able to turn our attention to some of those. Generally, data analytics, this is our ability to use the information that's coming back. And so the team's been working hard to make sure that that information is available to all employees to make sure that they have the opportunity to get benefits and look at information for use cases we couldn't even dream of. Looking at all of our events and alarms, making sure that we have that readily accessible to those who need to see it. Revenue protection is another area, so looking for tamper. The meters do come with something called a tamper alarm. They can tell when the meter's been tilted, somebody tries to pull the meter. And so we try to correlate that first, making sure, and actually, of all the tamper alarms that we've had so far, it's been us, ourselves, you know, one of our own staff out doing work for a customer. So it's all been good so far, but it does have that ability to report that back, and then we'll do some other analytics to make sure that we're not subject to power theft. The team is also supporting time of day rate planning, and also looking to integrate our AMI data into our load planning and analysis tools used by our system planning department. So we're really trying to make sure that we are looking at all of the data and how much more granular we can get in checking for issues on our grid.
Could you say more about support? What kind of support? Who? What?
For the time of day rates planning, so we will be the ones having to feed the data. So depending on how the structure of the different rates or time of days. Class will come out. It's the meter data management system that actually provides that data to the billing system. So there's work that needs to be done by on the billing side, but there's also work in serving up that data for the billing system to run.
So by support, you mean by the team or by customers?
Correct, by our team to configure and feed that data.
All right, thank you.
Commissioner, you have a question?
Yeah.
And how billing handles that. Is that all automated and integrated now?
We are ready for it. There still needs to be configuration on the billing side, on the SAP side, to do time of day. I think there's a lot of work yet to happen there. That's a separate program.
So then is it all manual?
It won't be manual. That will be a fully automated process. I don't know if I'm answering your question.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Effectively, when a bill comes due for a customer, the billing system makes a request over to the meter data management system for billable data. That information is sent back. The bill amount is calculated by the billing system, and the bill is printed earlier, virtually.
Commissioner Olson, were you asking more to the status of the time of day?
No, I wasn't. In the past, we've been informed that some work needs to be done on the accounting side, programming, and it was pretty complicated, was my understanding. And they were having to do some work around, so but as we move further into this and expand time of day, I'm hoping that that can be in place.
Yeah, yes, it will, and it'll be. As Tim said, automated.
And integrated.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. At some future point, if you commissioners would be interested, it'd be interesting to look at what those bills look like. Or just curious to so we can have a flavor at some point to understand how clear they are for the customer and time and day bills.
Or time and day.
Yeah, when we get to that point.
Gotcha.
I didn't include, there's a couple other items that I didn't include on this list, but I'll mention. One is that we're right on the cusp of being able to provide our energy control dispatchers the ability to ping a meter from within their outage management system. So they can see if they can verify if a customer's meter is out, they can verify if that customer's neighbors are out and just haven't called or gotten a report in. So very excited about getting that in their hands. Another report that we have is something called a reverse energy report. So we'll be able to correlate where we are getting a reverse energy flow back onto the grid, but that customer is not a known solar customer. So we'll be able to present that information back to our energy services team and give them a chance to connect with our customers. So we're excited to do that.
So that would be like you're in an outage generator backfeeding during.
That's another scenario that yeah, we'll be looking for closely. That will be a slightly different report where we know that the meter, we can tell that the meter is out of power from the grid side, but power is still flowing. So we need to make sure that there's a disconnect switch.
So you're talking about people backfeeding when their power is on.
Correct, correct. Which is in a solar case, that's.
Understandable.
Yes.
Expected, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question. Back on slide 5, you talked about the focus area for deployment being the East County.
Yep. Yes.
Is there a map or something that shows where if they're already installed, or is that available on the website? Or
it's not already installed. We do have a broad map that's on our website on snopa.com. Internally, we do have some maps that we are kind of tracking where that we track by meter route,
Uh-huh.
So we are tracking where those are.
Okay.
So it's predominantly in the Bothell area right now where deployment is completed in a number of routes.
I wouldn't have guessed that to be East County.
Bothell is not. So we are shifting our focus to the Highway 2 corridor.
The what?
Highway 2 corridor.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. So we are starting out in Index and working our way back in.
Okay.
And part of the reason for that is making sure that we stay ahead of winter weather. It'll
good.
Be really dicey out there.
Good.
And so this is a chance in good weather summertime for us to knock that out.
Thank you.
That.
Questions?
I do have a couple questions. Our last report, there was discussion about census.
Yes.
And their production capability.
Yes.
And do we have any update on the status of what you call the DC-96 production line operation? It's in the second quarter.
Yeah,
so this is first quarter.
So I was expecting that update at least a week and a half ago. We were actually pinging that maybe today. Yeah. yeah, so that is concerning. So in our my last conversation with them, which was probably a month ago, they were still confidently saying numbers will pick up third quarter and quite a bit fourth quarter. So we're waiting for confirmation of the third quarter numbers to make sure that we're still on track.
Okay, production. And then there was some reporting, the last report, that there was a discussion of building another line.
Correct. So that's part of that. Yes.
Oh, it's all
working. Yeah, that'll be part of it. So they have some other customers that are wrapping up, which are freeing up production capability that can come to us in addition to adding a line.
Were these customers that were in the queue before us?
Tacoma, yes. Yeah.
Sorry about that. And there was information given in the last one that wasn't in this one, so I don't want to be mixing my questions. How many meters do we have in inventory? Let's say residential in inventory.
In inventory, I have the number, not right in front of me, but
someplace.
Yeah, so I
don't.
It's
seven. It's not on the top of your head.
It's at least 10,000 meters.
Oh, 10?
Yes. So with 1,000 a week is our target, or
right.
1,000 a day is our target, you know, and currently at 1,000 a week, we're trying to make sure that we maintain a little buffer so that our installers never have to idle if there's a hiccup in supply.
Yeah. Boy, that's a hindrance.
It's
not the work that we're doing, but.
Right.
We should.
Okay.
A little bug in your ear that Snohomish is waiting and we deserve service.
We let them know that every time we talk.
Let me out.
Our envoy.
You do not want me talking to a manager.
I have a question. So the meters are coming from Mexico?
The electric meters are coming from Mexico.
So is there any problem with getting lots of orders if there are issues?
There can be delays at the border, so they do have to go through customs at the border. So often we do know when meters have shipped, and we know that there is then the transport delay, and part of that includes a stop at the border for customs.
A couple of questions. So we've just had some storms, outages. We've had more opportunities to see how the system works and how it integrates. Can you talk about outages a little bit? Challenge, good or bad?
I think our area that we had meters deployed was probably not hit as hard from an outage perspective. So I don't think we had quite the learning opportunity that, that we hoped for.
Okay. So the next thing is, one of the things we talked about in the business case was being able to evaluate all the homes on one transformer.
Correct.
With the idea that we don't know whether we're oversized transformer, it's undersized. Have we started looking, now that we've done, instead of friends and family and put meters everywhere, we're concentrating on circuits and routes?
Yes, so that report is, we proved out the concept.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're waiting on the report, which is in development. And then we have been talking with our engineers, our local office engineers, and getting the word out to them on that. So back on that last line, that integrating the data into the load forecasting and analysis, that's where we actually feed it into like the grid planning, and that's where we can do a lot more detail from a planning perspective. Our designer engineers, they will actually, anytime new requests come in, they'll be able to use that report that's coming to revalidate an individual transformer in an individual neighborhood.
It'll be interesting if we have wins in the future on that.
Yes.
It'll be interesting to understand.
Yeah, I think it's both. It's planning for the future, so getting the data, if we have to install a new plat, new development, we can look at the AMI data more granular to see if we have to build infrastructure. But it's also the existing infrastructure, so
mm-hmm.
we'll be able to take the data once it's the report and the logistics are worked out to see if we have circuits currently that maybe homeowners have installed an air conditioner or other EV charging haven't made us aware, and it could be overloading their line, their cable, their transformers.
Yeah, and that's actually that's the area I was coming from. I drive around neighborhoods near me, and I see more and more air conditioning units, heat pumps.
Yeah.
In areas that are historically gas heated. And I just wonder how that load is working.
So are we?
Well, and of course we haven't gone through winter with all these meters.
Sure.
I guess that'll be the real critical test.
Yeah.
Well, potentially.
Yeah. Commissioner?
Yes.
I promise. I think this is the last. I thought I heard presentations back. You're talking about commercial and industrial in terms of meter supply lagging. I thought a lot of commercial and industrial already had their meters had that this capability. Am I mixing the apples?
So some of our biggest do.
Okay.
They've had it. We are still replacing the meters that are on theirs because the newer meters integrate better, more seamlessly with our system. But if you've heard the term MV90 in the past, okay. MV90 was the system that we'd use to dial up. We had a modem that would call that meter and download the data. So AMI will be over the air like all the others.
Okay. I guess I misunderstood in the past. I mean, industrial would include Boeing?
Yes. Those would be, some of our biggest customers out there.
All right.
Yeah, the MB90 system does serve the larger industrial, and it works very similar to the AMI. It is a form of AMI. It's just that our new connect-up system and the technology is just so far advanced that we want to replace that. But we don't send meter readers. I think we still send them on occasion, but we don't have to send a meter reader to know what the load is for the for the bigger customers.
Those customers, okay, thank you.
Any follow-up questions?
I don't have.
Thank you, great presentation.
Thank you. Yeah, great job, Jim.
Congratulations on the promotion.
I guess.
Now you cannot retire.
All right, next up, we have a district-owned electric vehicle charging rate retail rate update. And Christina Langwood. Good morning, Christina.
Morning. Good morning, Commission. I'm Christina Langwood, and I will be presenting you on about the Schedule 83 rate, which is the rate that we charge for public charging that we as the district own, and then we charge the people plugging in this rate. And this presentation this morning is only for your information and consideration. So I'll start the presentation by talking about the chargers that we currently have, which are the level 3 chargers that are right outside of this building, and some proposed updates that we have for the rates that we're going to charge them. And then with the second part of the presentation, we'll talk about some new chargers that we would like to put in and make available to the public that are actually level 2 chargers, so a different kind of charger that will need a different rate. And then we'll go through the next steps. So as I just said, we have several chargers right now available for the public in front of this very building. And they're currently charging 44 cents per kilowatt hour for actual charging services. And then if the customer remains more than 10 minutes without charging plugged into the charger, they will be charged a 40 cent idle fee for every minute after that. Since we installed the chargers back in 2022, we have seen increases in usage that are actually quite similar to that we forecasted and modeled when we set the rate in place. But there have been a few tweaks for the usages, of course, and there's also been tweaks to the underlying rate. So the rate that was used to create this charging rate is actually the Schedule 20 rate, which is the usual rate for these kind of non-residential applications. And we have some assumptions behind the continuing trend of charger usage. And then we levelize the costs that we would expect to recover from the Schedule 20 rate, as well as the capital costs and the maintenance costs over 10 years. And we get this nice levelized per kilowatt hour rate. And of course, all these things have changed a little bit. The underlying Schedule 20 rate has just changed in April. And there were a few tweaks to the usage forecast, even though it's actually surprisingly similar. And of course, a few small tweaks to the maintenance costs. And when you put in all these new data points, we get a rate that's quite close to the existing rate, only a few cents more, 2 cents more for the energy charge. But actually, the idle charge is much less, less than half of what we estimated. And this is because we're finding that customers are actually not idling in the way that we had sort of feared that they would idle. And this is good for the usage of the chargers and keeping them clear. But it really makes us question why we would have an idle fee at all. Because it's not a problem for keeping people to not camp out in front of the chargers, but it actually has ended up being a sort of an administrative problem. Unfortunately, there are two different tax rates that apply to each of these two parts of the rate. The energy charge is under the local municipal tax code its own taxable entity as an energy sale, which is taxed at 6%. But the idle fee is considered more like a good or service that gets your regular 9% sales tax, or almost 10% sales tax there. So the software, however, is not really designed to think about these fees as different things, because that's something that's sort of unique to our region of how these things are taxed. And so it requires a bunch of manual labor to parse apart which part of the fee is taxable at what rate and to remit the taxes correctly to all the entities on just a few dollars. So we're only getting about $40 a month in these idle fees at the current rate. And if we drop them down to the cost of service rate, it would be half that. And then you're only getting 9.9% on that. So we're talking $2 or $4 a month. And is it really worth all this staff time, hours of staff time, to remit $2? And we would suggest that's maybe not the highest use of our time and resources. So we're actually recommending that we just dispense with the idle fee altogether and just have the plain energy charge.
Good. Just don't want to publicize that.
Yeah, we're not going to put a big sign that says free parking here.
Just stay here.
But yeah, it doesn't seem like a good use of our resources.
Yes.
So if we did that, this would be the result. We just get rid of the idle fee down to $0 and just have the 2 cent per kilowatt hour increase based on our latest cost of service model and rates and forecasts. Now, by the Arlington microgrid, as we discussed earlier when we were talking about education and the public and all that good stuff, we do have or are putting in chargers up there at the microgrid, and we have some other thoughts of places we could put chargers. But those kinds of chargers are level 2 chargers. So the difference is the speed of charging. Level 3 is our direct current chargers, which goes into the battery very fast. Battery power is direct power, so it's going right into there very fast, and they have a very high possible peak demand. The level 2 chargers are alternating current, which is the usual kind of electricity that comes out of your socket. And they have a lower peak demand, and they charge the car a slower rate. And so if we use the same methodology, right, the same underlying Schedule 20 rate, some forecasts about the usage, some knowledge that we have about their installation costs and their expected maintenance cost, we get about half the price per kilowatt hour, which makes intuitive sense. Because something that's driving that higher level 3 charging rate is actually those peak capacity costs, and these have much lower peak capacity costs. So that makes intuitive sense to us. And then these would even have a lower idle fee of about 3 cents should we decide to charge an idle fee, which is again another argument for just dispensing with that fee, because it would be so minimal. And so our final recommendation would be to change the current level 3 charging rate up by 2 cents, and then to implement a new line in the rate schedule that would allow us to charge 22 cents for these new level 2 chargers. And then the taxes, there's some enabling language in the schedule that allows us to charge whatever tax rate on top of that is in the jurisdiction. It varies. The current level 3 chargers are not here in Everett, and the new ones would be in Arlington. So they currently have the same tax rate, but they could change in the future. And if the commission is amenable to this idea, we will have a public hearing on the topic on July 2nd, and then consideration on July 16th, which would allow us to have an effective date on August 1st. Any questions?
Any questions, Commissioner?
None.
So we're adding level two, is that one charger or multiple?
I think it's multiple, I do not recall.
It is multiple.
Okay.
I don't remember how many, but.
And so district vehicles are charged there as well?
I would say yes, that's my.
Well, isn't that a big deal?
Yes.
We have the ability to charge district vehicles there. Now, this is designed to be a public-facing rate.
And so is this the ongoing pilot that we're gathering data on that at some point this will expand exponentially?
As far as.
As far as the meters.
Charging?
Yeah, the charging meter. We don't know that yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Take away that question.
This was just, this is part of the new facility at Arlington.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because we don't have a plan for wide meter deployment, not wide meter deployment, wide charging deployment of our own.
Correct.
Right, we're just doing it at this point in our own facilities.
Yes.
Or, I would probably the impression that that's a given.
Yeah.
The Rs, it could be a different fleet deployed, okay.
Just a quick comment on that.
Jason, you introduce yourself.
Yes, Jason Ziskowski, Assistant General Manager for Facilities Generation and Power and Transmission. So down here in the basement at the electric building, we have chargers to charge our own fleet vehicles. And then like up at the Arlington office, we'll be putting in these level twos. So, you know, if there's an employee driving an electric vehicle, then they can plug into that and charge where they're here at work, or a customer. So it's more that the intention there is public facing, and then if we have electric vehicles up there in our PUD fleet, we'll have separate chargers for those to be able to charge them as well.
Oh yeah, Paul.
Go ahead.
You were gonna.
I do, but I'll go last.
Oh, thank you. This makes sense. Dollars and cents, but. Are we moving away from expanding the charger that feeds directly into the battery for another reason?
Oh, why we chose level two instead of level three?
Yeah.
I am not sure why that design choice was made.
Okay, it's not a big deal, huh?
It'd be expensive.
Am I asking a question that's not relevant?
Complete transparency, I'm getting ready to type Jason a text that exact question. Of why we chose.
Oh, I'm so smart. Why not?
You jumped on it.
Great minds.
I don't know the answer. Because the first thing that came to my mind is why wouldn't we go back with a level three? It's quicker. The speed of charging or the rate of charging seems to be, kind of a customer focus of those that have electric vehicles. So, and or have one of each if we. I think that the rate, which is the big difference, right? Half the cost to charge. If the rate is, an incentive for somebody to do level two, why not do both? But we'll bring back that answer because I'm curious as well.
You look at it from a customer's perspective, I might look at rate, which leads me to level two, but anyway.
Yeah, and if I remember when we talked about the level three, we looked at the map. The hole for high-speed charging close to I-5 in this part. So I think we also had a grant.
Yes.
And so I think that's part of, I think the cost is significantly higher.
Yeah.
I think level two is more like you see at libraries and other places. And so I guess that's an interesting question. Is someone going to get off the freeway, go charge at our new office? Or is it more like customers or employees, probably more likely employees, would want to charge their vehicle whether they're working here?
Yeah. I think we need to be able to answer those questions because, again, if you think somebody coming in to do, pay their bill or talk to an engineer, whatever that could be, it's not going to be a long period of time.
Right.
They want to leave their car to charge. But again, we'll do a little more research and come back with a response.
Well, so that gets to a question about the idle time. And completely agree that when the software can't handle the taxes properly, it makes no sense to take on that administrative burden. But I can imagine, and so actually when I think about like the Arlington location and the level two charger, I think of that being probably more about helpful to employees.
Yeah.
And so you have a potential for someone to plug in and stay plugged in all day.
Yeah, there.
And I'm wondering, and I guess that we can always manage that as just an office manager.
Yeah, so you know, if we have employees that are having issues, that's something we can work on as an employee relationship. The other thing is that a level two charger takes a lot longer to charge. So if you're coming in with any significant amount of low battery, there's a question of will you even be able to charge enough to get to the point of idling before you would need to leave. So it's a little bit more self-limiting in that way, that you're just going to be using it a longer amount of time by the nature of the product.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I just can't imagine if you're a customer, you're gonna spend the time at our facility, that it makes it worthwhile to charge there, so. I'm glad we're putting chargers, but I can, you know, I understand if some employee works there and they plug in for 8 hours, plenty of juice to get them home where they live.
On a personal note, I'll note that there's a level two charger at my grocery store, and I'll plug in there because it's a great parking spot.
There you go. Yeah. And I guess that's the other point, is there's other places with level two chargers where there's other things to do besides pay your bill.
Yeah.
Right. You can walk across to a restaurant.
Well, and even here, the parking fee out front, you can park, you know, anywhere along that California, and it's free parking.
Yeah.
So you don't have to park in the EV like it's the last spot available.
Right.
So I don't know that there's much incentive or need to charge an idle time.
Yeah. Any other questions?
But this discussion does not have any effect on our presentation this morning, correct, in terms of the rates?
Yeah.
Recommended rate changes. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. Great job. That is it for presentations this morning.
Okay, it is now 10:02 a.m. and the board will recess into executive session to discuss the performance of a public employee under this term set forth in the Open Public Meeting Act. It's anticipated the executive session will last approximately 16 minutes and will conclude at 11:02. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission room at 1:30 p.m. Okay, it is now 11:02 a.m. The executive session will be extended for approximately 20 minutes and will conclude at 11:22.